This show is a proud member of the Healing Broadcast Network. Are you annoyed by affirmations? When someone says to you, "Think positively," do you say, "Now why would I want to go and do that?" You need to think positively. That's the answer to all of life's greatest challenges. I don't think you know what you're talking about.
Oh, I think I do.
You know, the problem I have is all in your perspective. Every time we talk, I feel quite disrespected. I have one single line, and every week I have to say it. I don't need you here when I'm trying to convey it. So back off, please, and let me spread the goodness. Let me say what I need. I thought you understood this. For 2 seconds a week, I spread a good message. Then you interfere with some corny interjection. The answer to it all is turn your thoughts around and start the show with a smile, not a frown. I don't know why you think my message is disgusting, but maybe you're the one who needs some attitude adjusting. Whoa, 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 slow down and stop your spraying. You're overreacting, not hearing what I'm saying. Positive thinking is a path to full denial, and you gloss over that like it's going out of style. You come on the show all pompous and proud and say, "Think positively," like you did just now. You make it sound like there's nothing more to do and that positive thinking is the best worldview. Well, I don't know where you learn to heal and grow, but that's not what I do on this self-help show, so back off, man. I'm not here to fight you. I don't teach that stuff, because it can come back to bite you.
Oh, so you think I don't know? Just because I'm part-time, I can't contribute to the show? Many people tune in just to hear me speak. They only listen to you, because you're on after me. I spread the good word, and then I go about my business. Then you come on the air, and all you do is diss it? I don't know why you have such a problem with me. I'm only telling people to think positively. So maybe you need to lighten up your stance. Positive thinking deserves a chance. I know you don't really believe in this stuff, but seriously, man, enough is enough.
What? I never said I don't believe in this stuff. I just said that positive thinking is not enough. You need to clear the path of your repressed emotions, not pretend you're happy and go through the motions. I don't know where you learn this kind of thinking, but every time you say it, I feel like you're winking as if it were a joke that you were spreading around the planet, and I'm here to say that you just need to can it. Stay open to your thoughts, and as your feelings come, express them. Positive thinking will only lead you to repress them. I'm not here to put you down or try to teach you a lesson. I'm just here to help the world get rid of their stress.
Oh, I see. I know. Understand a lot. In order to be free, you need to express your thoughts, where before I thought, and I could clearly see, that positive thinking would be all you need. But now I see that there's a lot I've been missing. I have a new path, a direction, and a vision. I feel kind of stupid and a little misdirected. So many years I've been doing what's expected. Wait a minute, what am I thinking? I don't want to transcend, I want to keep on believing. Open my mind, learn some personal growth. Heck no, think positively until the next show.
If affirmations feel like lies and positive thinking feels like denial, then get ready to start creating the life you've always wanted now. Hello, this is Paul Coliani, host of The Overwhelmed Brain, the personal growth show for the critical thinker. On every episode, we'll talk about practical, down-to-earth steps to help you improve your mood and keep you sane in this powerful journey we call life. I want to help you bridge the gap between your emotions and reason, causing you to discover why you do the things you do and what you can do to reach higher levels of happiness and lower levels of stress and overwhelm. If you're here to learn more common sense tips for improving your life, you're in the wrong place. This is the direct path to uncommon sense, and that's why it's going to help you learn, heal, grow, and evolve. My ultimate goal is to help you become empowered so that you can create the life you want. Today's quote is by Tara Brock, and it's this: "Feeling compassion for ourselves in no way releases us from responsibility for our actions. Rather, it releases us from the self hatred that prevents us from responding to our life with clarity and balance." One of the most important steps in your personal growth, healing, and evolution in this life is the practice of self-compassion. Self-compassion is almost like treating yourself as if you were helpless. And it's odd for me to say that because I know you're not helpless, and I teach you not to be helpless on this show. But what I'm referring to is when you can step back from yourself and look at your life and then see yourself as a different person and be compassionate towards that person, you'll treat yourself a lot differently. We are in our own bodies, our own mind, and we only know our perspective from our experiences. And we take this perspective everywhere we go in life. So a good meditation or just a thought process that you can do is step out of your body for just a minute and look at yourself as someone who needs help. Now, I like to teach empowerment, so I don't want you to stay in this helpless position. But if you step out of yourself and look at yourself as if you need help, what would you tell yourself? What kind of advice would you give yourself? If you saw someone walk up to you and try to scam you out of money or try to hurt you physically, what would you do? Would you protect that person in front of you that is you? Would you stand back and watch things unfold, hoping that that person can take care of themselves? Or knowing that that person needs your help and needs your guidance, your mentorship, would you step in and take care of things for that person? This is a great exercise. It's a good meditation. It only takes a couple minutes, but sometimes I teach this, and you may have heard this, where you see yourself like 10 or 15 feet in front of you, and that self is in a wheelchair, and he or she can't get out of that wheelchair, but they're sitting there on the sidewalk, and a white van pulls up, or any color van, and the side door opens, and there are suspicious-looking people in there motioning for that person to get in the van. And you're watching this unfold. What do you do? Do you walk over and do what you can to protect this person? Or do you just watch the events unfold? Now, the reason I teach that process is because we have a tendency to mistreat ourselves. We have a tendency to show more compassion towards someone else than ourselves. And the reason we don't tend to show compassion towards ourselves in a lot of ways is because, like I said, we are in our body. We are in our mind. We can't see ourselves objectively enough until we step out of ourselves in an exercise like that. Now, the second part of all this is that you can't actually be compassionate towards someone else until you know compassion for yourself. You can't show love for someone else until you know love for yourself. You can't feel for others if you don't feel for yourself. Compassion involves knowing compassion. And the only way to know it is to be compassionate towards yourself. Then when you are compassionate towards yourself, you will have enough to give to others. You will come from a place of compassion. And when you come from this place of intrinsic compassion, built in, something that you completely embrace because you love yourself, because you support yourself, because you want you to succeed in life, to heal and grow and evolve in life. When you come from that place, you are able to give it. Now, some of us have had dysfunctional childhoods, so we don't know what compassion feels like. We've never given it to ourselves, or our parents or caretakers never gave it to us. So what is that like? And I take you back to that original scenario. Imagine you're there, 10, 15 feet in front of you, and a situation unfolds that would put that person in danger. What do you do? We almost all have a hardwired sense of care for other people. And when we don't, we're either in prison because we can't control ourselves, or there's some other sort of psychological situation going on there. But almost all of us have this intrinsic love and compassion for others, even if just a little bit. And I bet you have more of it for people that are very close to you. And guess who the closest person to you is? And of course, it's you. So if you saw yourself standing there as if you were able to step out of your body What would you do to be compassionate towards yourself? What would you do to love yourself? Would you hug this person? Would you talk to this person? Would you take this person out for a night on the town just to enjoy yourself? This is what you do and how you gain more compassion, how you gain more love, how you gain more support for other people. And when you have this inside yourself, it comes out naturally. You don't have to try. You don't have to try to be compassionate. You don't have to try to love anyone because you've learned what it feels like and it becomes you. Now, before you think that I mean that you need to love yourself before you run into a burning building to save a child or save anyone, that's not what I mean. There are times in your life where you're just going to drop everything and help someone out. That is compassion, but the idea is to do that for yourself. So if you're at home one night and you're feeling down, what would your best friend do if they showed up and they wanted to do something or talk to you or give you a hug? What would they do? Do that for yourself. I know it's strange thinking about giving yourself a hug, maybe, but this is where it begins. And you don't even have to do it physically. You can do it in your mind. There's something else I teach, and that is visiting yourself as a younger person inside your mind. And the way you do that is you think of a place in time when you were younger that you needed support the most. A place in time in your past where as soon as you think of, let me think of a bad moment in my history, whatever pops up, the first thing that pops up, close your eyes and imagine you going back in time as the person you are now and visiting that younger version of yourself. You're not changing what happens, but you are there for them, talking with them, being there physically present for them so that they can get through this hard time and that they know there's a light at the end of the tunnel. There's a positive result that comes out of all this. Even if you haven't seen that positive result yet, be the person that you need to be for that person in your history, yourself, so that they can get through the experience. This is a powerful exercise. It might sound a little silly, but you know what? That doesn't matter because it's how the brain is structured. It's how our neurology is created as we're growing up. When we face challenging times, the wiring in our brain literally changes. We're creating new neurological connections, which are our memories. And attached to those memories are our emotions. And when we think about something in the past that has an attached negative emotion, then imagining us going back to that past event to help us through the situation, to be there, to support ourselves, changes the emotion that we felt during that time. Now, what this does is as you come forward into the present again, it changes how you felt when you think about it in the past. So it really is like you're traveling through time, visiting yourself, being there when you needed yourself most, then coming back to now, and then remembering that past time as having a different effect on you. And that different effect is that it's not so painful. It's not so hard. Or it might have been hard, but doesn't hurt as much. And the memory has changed into more of a resource or a reference for you to take what you learned then with you into your future, into all other situations that might open up and create more lessons for you. You know, those hard times that always seem to come up at the most inappropriate moments. Those are lessons waiting to manifest. That is wisdom waiting to be created. Now, this last thing about compassion. If you're overly compassionate to other people without being at least moderately compassionate for yourself, for example, if someone needs your help, but you also need help, but you end up helping them before you help yourself, and you give and give and give, and you just become this super giver, you will become exhausted from being compassionate. And that sounds strange, but when you're so compassionate towards others, you exhaust yourself because of the golden rule of compassion, which is self-compassion comes before compassion for others. Like I said, there are times when you're just going to jump into compassion mode and help someone out. But as you go through life and as you go through each day, ask yourself, how can I be compassionate towards you today? What can I show you? What can I give to you? What do you need to hear? Don't get exhausted from compassion for others. Be compassionate towards yourself, but don't become such a giver, a person who has an overly excessive amount of compassion, that you burn out. I know this from personal experience. This is who I was for so long. I was so overly compassionate, so overly giving to everyone I met. And really what that breaks down to is my failure to honor my personal boundaries. I had personal boundaries that I let people cross time and time again. If they would ask, hey, you want to work on the weekend, when I had something planned, I would say, oh, yeah, sure. And, you know, that was a personal boundary. I really had family time planned, and that was most important to me. Yet I did not honor myself. That is a lack of self-compassion. Sure, it might help me keep my job. It might help me get more on my paycheck. But what am I following? Am I following the needs of others, or am I following the direct needs of myself? Am I being self-compassionate? Am I being self-loving? You know, there are times that you have to make decisions like that. Like, I can't take a day off of work. They'll fire me. And if I'm fired, I'll have no money. And even though I want to spend time with my family and I've already committed to it, now my boss wants me to come in or they'll fire me. And, you know, these are the things that you need to evaluate in your life to find out if you want to keep this kind of stuff in your life. If you're in a situation where you feel like you're walking on eggshells and you'll get fired for one small thing that your boss doesn't like, then you might need to reevaluate where you are, if you want that in your life or not. When it comes to things like that, I look at it this way. If I'm walking on eggshells for years and years, for example, in a job I don't like, is it worth it at all? Is it worth going to a place day after day where I feel like I'm under the threat of termination every single day? Is it worth it? Or should I find another job that's probably not as much pay, but more fun, and when I get home, I'm in a better mood and I can have more quality family time? This is a personal decision, whether it's a job, a relationship, another situation that you've committed to, but you're not sure if you want to keep anymore. And it all boils down to how much compassion you have for yourself. And the quickest way to be self-compassionate is to be your own best friend. If you're sitting on the couch and you can imagine yourself sitting across from you, what would you tell your best friend? Or what would they tell you? Be your own best friend. Because that's where typically the best advice comes from. Especially since you are your own best friend, you're going to give yourself the best advice. It reminds me of someone I know who went to a therapist with her husband once. And in therapy, they were having marriage problems. In therapy, the wife was asked by the therapist, if I were you, what would you tell me to do? And she said, run. And you know, she didn't leave her husband, but she never took her own advice. And she had a very bad marriage. She had a very abusive marriage. And she heard this advice from herself, and she never took it. And it became a very difficult situation for her. Thankfully, she's out of that situation now, because she had to go through years of learning and experience to gain the wisdom that she has now. So take your own advice, because sometimes it's the best advice that you can take. Be self-compassionate. Say things to yourself that are supportive. Do things with yourself that make you feel good. Let's go on to our next segment called Ask Paul. All right, if you ever felt like you were powerless to defend yourself against someone who's maybe bullying you, not physically, but with money or power, I want you to consider what my girlfriend calls legal insurance. She says she'd go without health insurance before dropping this. But you know what? Don't take it from me. Take it from her. I asked her to share something she went through in her own words. And this is the first time she's ever appeared on my show. Here she is, Asha.
You were just talking about being bullied, and I had gotten divorced, and my ex-husband constantly, he had all the money. I was a single mom. I was poor. He was not paying his bills. My son had some learning challenges. He needed extra help after school. So I was not working regularly, and my ex-husband would not pay on time. Then he filed a motion saying that I was an unfit mother with all these false accusations. He hired an attorney to help him do it. He hired the biggest toothed attorney in my area. This guy is a barracuda for family law. Everybody knows that. And so I called Legal Shield desperate with questions. They answered my questions. And then there was a point where I had to hire legal representation because I needed a lawyer. I needed help beyond just advice. And I have to say, I was so fortunate. I found the best family law attorney that I've ever had. And I saved thousands of dollars, huge discount off the hourly rate. They guarantee you at least 25% discount. He kept me positive. He kept me on task and in the right frame of mind to keep going and dealing with everything that was coming my way. And he did it with integrity and he did it with craft. And I ended up winning, which I've won, honestly, I can't say that everybody will win, but I have won every case that I've had against my ex-husband every time he tries to bludgeon me. So I highly recommend them. And that's why I joined to finally bring something back in for myself and now as a sponsor to your show.
So if they have any questions about this service, how can they reach you?
You can call me at my Get Out of the Mess number, which is 678-335. That's wrong. It's 678-355-8777. Or you can email me at Asha, A-S-H-A, at getoutofthemess.com.
All right, this next segment is called Ask Paul. And here's today's letter. Hello, Paul. I stumbled across your podcast about a month ago. I've spent quite a bit of time listening to them, and although it's hard to tell whether my life has changed already, I'm very inspired listening to them. A few years ago, I relocated to another state for a job. The job was a fantastic opportunity, but as I worked in the industry, I started to become depressed by the kind of work I did, so I quit. I decided to change my industry of work and do something that I very much enjoy doing. After another few years and several jobs later, I can officially say that I have a job that I really like. I'm married to a woman that I love, we own our home, and things seem to be going very well. The dilemma I have is that with everything going as well as it is, why am I afraid to be happy? Is it even possible to be afraid of happiness? I seem to do just fine when I'm at work, but on my evenings and weekends, I catch myself being unhappy even when I am doing something fun. Do you have any advice? Thank you so much for your time. I love your podcast and I'll support it in any way I can. Bill. And as usual, that's not his real name. Thank you for writing that, Bill. You know, that is very revealing. I've been in this situation most of my life, actually. I had relationships that were fantastic. And at the same time, I had a really great job. And then I'd find myself in situations where, quote, I'm supposed to be happy and I'm not. I'd be at certain events where everyone's laughing and having a great time, but I was not happy inside. I probably was laughing and looked happy on the outside, but there was an underlying layer of unhappiness inside of me. So I don't know if you feel the same way now, but I do recognize this, and I can explain what's happening. What typically happens when you have this underlayer, this underlying layer of unhappiness or sadness or anger or any type of negative emotion is that, first of all, you're keeping busy enough so you don't have to address it at work. When you're at work, your mind is engaged. You're focused on different things that have nothing to do with the reason you might be unhappy. And then you come home and there are different emotions and different things going on at home. Your wife may be showing you love, and the house is a place where you feel comfortable and safe. And all of these things add up and you go, why aren't I happy when I have everything I want? The main reason this happens is because you associate happiness, love, comfort, safety, all of the good stuff, you associate with something not so good. You associate with something bad. And the reason this happens is because when you were growing up, when you gave love and then you received something in return for that love, it might have been toxic. For example, when I was growing up, I wanted to show love towards my stepfather. And what he returned was an alcoholic version of trying to survive in his own skin. It wasn't love for me the way I needed it. It wasn't that unconditional, hey, your father's not here, I'm going to do the best I can as a father to you. It was a poison. It was a poisonous kind of love. And I can't even call it love, really. It was him trying to survive and me interpreting it as love. Now, I want you to think about something that happened in your past. Maybe it was in your childhood, maybe earlier than that, maybe later. But when you think about your past, when you wanted or needed love and support in return, what did you get? What did you get instead? And whatever you come up with is typically why you feel this underlayer of unhappiness today. Now, if you didn't come up with anything, there is still something in there that you have repressed. And the way this works is, first, in your life, you know, as the adult that you are now, the first thing that happens is you have a thought. And that thought, if you don't like it, gets suppressed. Along with that thought is an emotion. And if you don't like the feeling that that thought comes with, you repress that emotion. Now you have a suppressed thought and a repressed emotion. Now you take those two and you multiply that over and over and over again every time you do that throughout life, and you end up in depression. I'm not saying that's where you are now, but I'm saying that's what happens. You build up layer upon layer upon layer of negativity inside your body. And eventually, you have so much negativity inside that your body starts to feel numb, that you start to feel numb, and you get this underlayer of depression. Now, like I said, I'm not saying that's where you are. Right now, you said, you know, you're not as happy as you want to be. You don't feel that happiness. And what I can speculate that you do today is something I repeat over and over again on this show, is not honoring yourself, not honoring your boundaries when it's time. And a good example of that, and I always have stories, is when I was married. When I was married, or even any relationship I've been in, but my marriage is when I learned the most about this, is when my wife and I would have an argument or a heated conversation, I would hold back what I really wanted to say for fear that she might not like it and she might leave me. Now think about that for a second. Have you ever been in a conversation where you really wanted to say something, really wanted to, I don't know, get back or at least speak your mind, and you decided not to? I want you to remember the feeling of that moment when you decided, I better not say it. And it doesn't feel very good. If you're playing along at home, this does not feel very good. Especially when the other person, it doesn't matter if the other person's right or wrong, but especially if the other person doesn't validate how you feel. But the problem is they won't know how you feel because you hold that in. In my first relationship of 13 years, we would have very heated conversations, but she would always, quote, win the argument. She would win, again, I quote that, she would, quote, win because I chose to back off. She had excellent skills at defending herself and proving her point. And she may have been right or wrong about every situation. It doesn't matter. But what she did every time, and she didn't even know that she was doing this at the time, was invalidate how I felt. That's really what it comes down to. When you're in a situation where someone makes you feel that what you say doesn't matter, and you take that as you don't matter, no matter what your argument is, no matter how logical or reasonable it is, what you say doesn't matter, and however you feel doesn't matter, that gets repressed. That builds on the layers of negativity that you are building inside of you, that you are piling on inside of you. So think of conversations that you have that have built up inside of you as negativity. There was a point in my marriage where my wife said one thing to me that changed my trajectory. It changed who I was. It was that pivotal moment of shift, of evolution. And that was when I turned from a child into a man. Now, you may have heard me talk about this, but there was a point I realized that I was handling adult situations like a child. And what I mean by that is I would not be the assertive adult that conveyed what he wanted. I would be the fearful child that approached situations asking for permission. Now, there's a big difference here. There's a difference between going, hey, I'm going to make something to eat. Do you want something? And saying, would it be okay if I made something to eat right now? Now, that may not be the situations you've been in. I've been in that situation, but you can tell the difference there. The assertive person who wants what they want will honor themselves and say, hey, I'm going to do this. Would you like to come along? Would you like to join me? And the scared, very dependent on someone else's approval will say, do you mind if I do this? Is it okay if I do this? And when you approach things like that, when you approach situations and communication like that, and you're always in that permissive state, you're always in that almost subservient state, like, are you okay with this? Then you are treating the other person as if they are overly sensitive, which they might be, and can't handle what you're about to say. And this needs to shift. I realize there are overly sensitive people in your life, but you'll never give them a chance to be comfortable in their own skin if you're always aware and sensitive to their sensitivities. You might disagree, and you have every right to, but sometimes when there are people that are so sensitive in your life and you approach every situation like you're walking on eggshells, then life becomes harder and you get unhappier. You know this. You've probably worked for someone who you feared, because if you did anything wrong, you're going to get yelled at or disciplined or even fired. I couldn't be in a situation like that. And I made a promise to myself that I would never stay in a situation that I felt fear every day, or at least almost every day. And that includes relationships, jobs, or any situation where if I had to feel fear of some sort every day, then I needed to get out of the situation no matter what the cost. And that's the most important part of this. No matter what the cost, no matter what the loss, if you live in fear every day, take yourself out of that. Because what's the point? What's the point of living in fear every day just to get to a point where you die? I mean, just be honest here. It's not fun. You're supposed to be here to not live in survival mode and not be afraid of things every day. When you are here to enjoy yourself and thrive in the world, in at least emotionally, then you can thrive in every other area of your life. If you're thriving emotionally, where you don't have this underlayer of sadness, where you don't have this fear every day, then you expand from there. You bring that into situations. And once you have this inside of you and you honor yourself by honoring your personal boundaries, by doing what's right for you, then you create the life you want. You create situations you want. And when you're in the situation you don't want, you either stand up to it or get out of it. Now, this could be hard. This could be very difficult. You could be in a situation where you live paycheck to paycheck, and if you lose your job, you lose your paycheck, can't pay rent, can't pay food, can't feed the family. I know, I've been there, but no matter what, I still honored myself. I still lived from a place of integrity in myself because I refused to live in fear every day. I had a job, and if I quit that job, we were going to end up back at the soup kitchen. 3 weeks into that job, I quit that job, and we did end up back at the soup kitchen. It was a hard choice, but then when I look back on it, it was an easy choice because the job was draining me. Now, can you do that when you have kids? That's a personal decision. This is something that I decided to do when, you know, I don't have any kids, but I was married and I had to make the choice to take my wife and I out of a place of getting a paycheck and back into a place of going to the soup kitchen every day. Now, what this led to was going into the welfare system, social services for your state. You know, I don't recommend this. I'm not saying this is the path that you take, because really what this comes down to is what you're willing to accept in your life in order to honor yourself. And then when you come to a place of accepting the worst case scenario or worse, then you find yourself making decisions out of honoring yourself. You find yourself making decisions for you and not for anyone else. Now, that doesn't mean you exclude family, but it does mean that how you define happiness changes. How you define what makes you happy changes. I've heard people leave six-figure-a-year jobs and take a lower pay just because they couldn't stand it anymore. Sure, money's coming in and you're paying all the bills, but it was so stressful. So they left those jobs, got different positions in different companies, and took all their skills into these other jobs that they were happier in. You know, you have to downgrade sometimes in order to upgrade your emotions. And all that means is sometimes you take some losses so you can get some incredible gains. Now, Bill, I don't know what happened in your life where you are afraid to be happy. I mean, what does that even mean? I'm afraid to be happy. When I think about that, I think of what's stopping me from being happy. That's the question. What's stopping you from feeling happy? And if you can't answer that question, then clear your mind for a second. Think of snow. That's it. Just white out your mind. Think of snow. And now come back for a second. And now let me ask you this question. What's the first thing that pops up in your mind when I ask, what is one thing that you wish was different in your life? What comes up? When you can think of one thing, the very first thing that pops up is usually the answer. Not always, but usually the answer. What is one thing you wish was different? Now, if that question doesn't bring up something that might be important to you, answer this. Was there ever a time in your life where you wish it had gone differently? What's the first thing that comes up? These are the kinds of questions that you need to ask yourself, because the origin of this can be discovered through self-exploration. It's not a matter of trying to be happy. It's a matter of something blocking happiness from existing. In my book, Clear the Path to Happiness, one of the things I talk about is the title of the book, Clearing the Path. Happiness is intrinsic in all of us, but in order to attain it fully, you have to clear the path of negative emotions. You have to clear the path of repressed anger, sadness, pain, or whatever else you have in your history, in your past, that is stopping you from being the person you want to be, that is stopping you from experiencing the happiness that you deserve. Now, here's another question I'm going to ask you, not because I don't know the answer, because I do, but because your answer may be different than what you think it is. Here it is. Are you worthy of happiness? What's the first thing that comes up? Is it an absolute, yes, I am worthy? Or is it a no? And attach your thoughts to that no. If it's a no, attach your thoughts to that no for a minute and explore it for a minute. Why aren't you worthy of happiness? Why? Self-worth comes from how we interpret the way people feel about us when we're children. Self-worth comes from our peers, the adults in our life, and how they treat us and how we feel about that treatment. So as we grow up, how worthy we feel turns into our confidence, our self-esteem, our enjoyment in life. If we don't feel we're worthy, if you don't feel worthy, then I want you to practice the exercise of going back in time in your mind and figuring out at what point you decided you weren't worthy. I mean, think about that. At what age, at what monumental event in life did you decide that you weren't worthy? I mean, that's huge. When you figure out that you don't feel worthy of happiness, you don't feel worthy of love, of support, then you have something major that you need to resolve in your life. Because I'm here to tell you, you are absolutely worthy. And if you're listening right now and you don't feel worthy, I want you to imagine you are the child that you were the moment you decided that you didn't feel worthy or that you weren't worthy. Be that child as you're listening to me. Just go right back into childhood and be that child. Close your eyes if you're not driving or operating heavy machinery. Just go back in time and be that child that didn't feel worthy and listen to me right now. I am proud of you. You are strong, creative, and I'm always impressed by you. I am proud of you, and I know you're doing the best you can. You are brilliant and beautiful. And sit with that for just a moment. If you have to stop this recording, go ahead and stop it. But when you're done, come on back and bring that worthiness with you. Bring that self-worth. Bring that strong sense of love and support. And I want you to lock that into your life right now. Bring that into your life right now. Got it? Now, if you weren't following along, you may not have needed this exercise. You may feel self-worth already. You may feel a high sense of self-esteem already. And if that's the case, that's excellent. But if there's any underlayer of that negative emotion, negative feeling, then that's a good exercise to go through. Now, something else you want to ask yourself is there anything in my past that I feel guilty about? Is there anything in my past I feel ashamed about or embarrassed about? Now, these are the things that if they still stick in your mind and when you thought of them, you felt bad thinking about them, those need to be resolved. Those emotions are still attached to your memories. Those emotions come through the years. They come with you through the years so that for some reason, every time you think of that memory, the emotion comes up. You know, I did something when I was 12 or 13 that I'm not very proud of and I'm ashamed about, but the emotion is no longer attached to the memory. At the time, I felt shame afterward. And then I took that shame with me until I was able to come to a place of self-forgiveness. And now I can still have the memory of what happened, but the shame is gone. I still felt ashamed, and I still wish I made different and better choices, but I came to a place of self-forgiveness. Now, this is important. Anything that you feel ashamed by, anything that you feel guilty about or embarrassed or whatever you went through in the past that you feel somehow responsible for, this is your opportunity as the adult you are to forgive the child that you were, even if it was yesterday. Because we do things sometimes from a child's viewpoint. We say things sometimes from a child's viewpoint. We behave from a child brain because that's how we learned how to behave. And when we haven't learned any new skills beyond what we've taken from childhood, at least in certain circumstances, then we behave like the child. So I want to give you this opportunity to forgive that child inside of you. You know, that inner child that you hear about in psychology circles. Forgive that child inside of you to release them from the burden. Release them because they were acting from a child's perspective. How can a child be blamed for doing something that they don't know the consequences of? And even if they did know the consequences of it, they still didn't have enough capacity to know the full effect of everyone involved, including themselves. You know, I've talked to abuse victims, sexual abuse victims, who have a tendency to blame themselves as children when they were young, when they were 4, 5, 6, 10, whatever, when they're at a point where they're not making adult decisions, but they feel guilty for the decisions they made for their participation in the abuse. Now, I'm here to tell you, children don't participate. They get coerced. Children don't participate in abuse. They get abused. And part of the abuse is convincing them that they want it. Part of the abuse is convincing them that it's good for them. Part of the abuse is convincing them that if they tell anyone else, they'll be in trouble. It's all abuse. If you're a victim of abuse and you feel somewhat responsible or partially or fully or any part of it that it's your fault, I'm here to let you off the hook. None of it was your fault. You got abused. It was their fault. They did it to you, and they may have made you believe that you wanted to be in it, or they may have made you believe that you made a conscious choice to do it. You cannot be conscious enough at that age to make choices that are right for you. That comes later. At that age, you're reliant on the adults in your life to make good, conscious, moral choices for you. And if they make choices that are self-serving, self-indulgent, and not compassionate for you, and you are harmed in any way from it, then it's abuse. And at the very least, it's trauma. And that's not your fault either. That's not your responsibility. You learn responsibility when you grow older. You learn how to treat others with respect, kindness, compassion, by how you're treated. You bring this stuff from your childhood into the adult world. So to the letter writer, Bill, I don't know exactly what's causing you to be afraid of happiness. But I do know that when there's that underlayer, that dark layer that you feel underneath that just doesn't allow you to be happy, there's always something that you're either not aware of and not exploring in yourself or refusing to explore in yourself. I had a coaching client not too long ago that said, Well, I'll tell you this story. And they told me a story and they said, I never told anyone that, but I didn't think it was a big deal. But then it turned out to be one of the biggest deals that she'd ever have to face because it involved shame. And she didn't even know she felt ashamed. But when she brought it to light and talked about it and shared it with me, it became one of the biggest issues in our sessions. So this is what I want you to do. Think about times that didn't really seem like a big deal or don't really seem like a big deal now and explore those. And how you do that is you ask yourself, am I over this? Do I still feel the pain or the hurt from this time? And be open to the responses and signals that your body gives you, because your body is not going to lie. Your body's going to tell the truth. And you know what I mean. When you feel anger, you feel it in your body. When you feel sadness, you feel it in your body. My anger comes from my stomach. Well, not comes from, but I feel anger in my stomach. So when I get angry, I have stomach issues. I have digestive issues. And I feel actual pressure or pain in my stomach. So this is how you explore these memories. How do I feel about this memory? Listen to your body. So I hope this answers your question, Bill. This is something that you can absolutely get through, but you will need to address it. You will need to explore it in yourself and understand that there is still something there that needs some introspection. And it could be something that you believe is minor, but it turns out it's not, and it's really something bigger than what you believe it to be. And my final thought on this is sometimes you have to unplug from your family, from technology, and plug into nature just to be with yourself for a few minutes and let whatever comes up, come up. I don't know if you meditate, but that's a good meditation, just to let whatever comes up, come up, welcome it, release it, or welcome it and go, oh, you're still in there. You can do this with your eyes open or closed, just as long as you are unplugged from anything that has an influence on you. Nature seems to be the least influential, but the most positive source to plug into. So that's what I recommend. Thanks for writing, Bill. I wish you the best. If you discover anything about yourself, you know how to reach me. Now on to our next segment, What's on My Mind Right Now. All right, typically we'd have a news and use segment today, but we're running short on time. So I want to express something that is on my mind that just occurred to me last night. Yesterday, my girlfriend and I took her son to his motocross race. He's a motocross racer, up and coming star, and we're very excited for him. And last night we were watching him and others race around the track. Now, if you've never been to a motocross race, it's interesting how they set it up. They have a lot of volunteers that they call flaggers. And these flaggers, they hold different colored flags to show the racers what's happening, just in case somebody crashes or they need to return to the starting gate or for any reason, really, so that the racers know what's going on because they're very intently focused on the race. Well, last night, we were there pretty late, and one of the final races that was going on, we noticed that a flagger did not see a motorcycle in the middle of the track just laying there. It was after a crash, and the racers were coming over a jump and practically landing on the bike, and the crowd starting to, you know, get crazy going, there's a bike on the track, get over there, flagger. And people are getting upset with the flagger, including us, because now there's a dangerous situation and these kids could get hurt. So my girlfriend runs over to the booth where they are running the show and she tells them what's happening. But by that time, a couple other flaggers came over and started slowing the riders down so they wouldn't hit the bike. And then they removed the bike from the field. Now, the energy in the crowd was, at least where I was standing, getting upset at this flagger and other people for not clearing the track because it presented a dangerous situation. And I found myself, and my girlfriend found herself, getting really upset at this particular flagger for not doing his job. I mean, from what I witnessed, he was sitting there staring into space and not exactly doing what would be expected. And it took a while for him to see the first crash, let alone notice that there was a bike on the track at all. But after my girlfriend talked to the people in the booth, she found out that all of these flaggers are volunteers and that they rarely, if get any training at all. And they're there just to do what they can to help out. They don't get paid and they may not even know too much about the sport. And just having anyone out there is better than no one at all. And the reason this is important is because we were starting to get upset with this one particular flagger because it just appeared that he was a comedy of errors. You know, and the reason that we get upset is because her kid is out there and all these other parents' kids are out there and we're worried that they might get hurt. But stepping back out of our emotions for a minute and really looking at the situation that these volunteers are put under gave us a slightly new perspective. First of all, how can we blame people who haven't been trained and are doing the best they can? How can I stand there and blame or judge someone who's doing the best he can without any sort of training and who actually volunteered to help out? So his heart was in the right place. But when it came down to a situation where he didn't really know exactly how to handle it, he did the best he could. And we even started feeling a little sorry for him and the other flaggers because these are people who really want to help out, took the time and energy out of their day to do what they can to help. Yet now all these eyes of judgment are on them, and no matter what they do, they're going to appear as the bad guy. So stepping back out of the role that I was in, really being concerned for the kids, which should be the number one priority for sure, but stepping out of my emotions of the moment really gave me a perspective of what these volunteers have to go through. For one, the day was hot. The sun was coming down all day long, and all these guys do is stand there and watch. They don't even move. They just stand. And it's a long day. In fact, when the night fell, the day got cold, and the night was upon us, and we were all getting warmed up in our jackets, but the flaggers didn't have jackets, and they were sitting there shivering, watching this race. And third, who am I to judge when I'm not out there volunteering and finding out what they have to go through? All of these things crossed my mind, and I talked about it with my girlfriend, and we both agreed that we actually feel pretty bad for these flaggers. They have to keep up with so much going on the track, and sometimes they miss things because it's just extreme conditions going on. So yes, number one priority is the safety of the kids, and if they don't know what they're doing, maybe they shouldn't volunteer. But at the same time, if no one volunteers, the kids don't get to race, nobody has fun, and you know, if there's a problem with it, who's going to take their place? So this was sort of an enlightening moment for me. I felt the eyes of judgment come upon me and look at these people as if they just were incompetent. And then I realized that competence comes from the top down. Competence is instilled in you. You know, I'm not talking about when we're growing up with our parents and such, although that is vital. I'm talking about the people who run the show are the ones to talk to and see if we can help them help these flaggers and other people that volunteer for this event. It's an all-weekend event, and these people are going through a lot just to make sure the kids are safe and have a good time. So the reason I wanted to share this with you is because we do tend to judge harshly those who appear to be doing things in a way that we don't want them to do them, when in reality, they're doing the best they can with the training or lack thereof that they received. And this was quite a perspective that we took away last night. And one of the things that we really came to terms with was, if we really have a problem with them, why don't we just volunteer? And if we're going to complain about them and not volunteer, then maybe we shouldn't complain. This is one of those moments that become a reminder that personal development and personal evolution never ends. Sometimes our perspective is not as it seems and is not the whole truth. If you ever see someone being blatantly incompetent or completely negligent or ignorant, just remember almost always that everyone does the best they can with the resources they have and with the guidance they've been given. And just an alternate perspective for anyone who volunteers out there and gets treatment that they don't believe they deserve, I am so thankful for you and your time and for what you do. Giving your time and energy away for free, that's just incredible. You have a big heart, and I appreciate you. And no matter if you volunteer or not, I want to thank you for tuning in today. We'll talk to you again soon. Thank you for listening to another episode of The Overwhelmed Brain. If you listen to this show and experience small shifts in your life, but just can't figure out how to get past that underlying feeling of negativity, or maybe you have challenges that no one else has been able to help you resolve, well, that's my specialty. A lot of people tune into this show looking for that one piece of information that changes everything. If you still haven't been able to make the changes that you want in your life, maybe you need one-on-one coaching with me. Visit theoverwhelmedbrain.com and click on Coach with Paul. I want to empower you to create the life you want and not be stuck at a point where you believe that's all there is. If you've been listening a while, then you know I'm a tad unorthodox. So reach out if you want to schedule a session and we'll work together to dissolve those emotional blocks. And just a quick reminder of the inner circle that I've talked about a couple times now. If one-on-one coaching is a tad beyond your budget, consider becoming a VIP luminary in the Overwhelmed Brain inner circle. It's something I'm very close to starting, but I'm still collecting your thoughts on if you would like to be a part of it or not and how to approach it right. The inner circle is where you get to access all the digital books and worksheets that I've created, along with the ones I want to continue to create. And we'll also have a group Q&A call once or twice a month just to connect in a way that isn't a full one-on-one session like it is with coaching, but it's much more than a voice on a podcast. So if you'd like to join a private group with me, give me your feedback. Visit theoverwhelmedbrain.com and click on TOB Inner Circle. It's all laid out there. I mean, who knows? Maybe we'll be on a group video chat together soon. So you can find out more information there, or you can send an email to vip@theoverwhelmedbrain.com. And thanks to those who've already given their feedback, I appreciate you. I thank everyone who has purchased a book or a worksheet, left a review in iTunes or Amazon, or used the Amazon link to shop as you normally would, which gives us pennies for every dollar you spend. I also want to thank Asha, an independent associate for Legal Shield. I really can't convey how important this service has been in our lives. So I had her come on the show and tell you of her real-world experiences, and she's had quite a few. So if you have any questions about this service, you can call her directly at 678-355-8777 or contact her at getoutofthemess.com or through her email at asha@getoutofthemess.com. You know, I get a lot of letters throughout the week. Some are a powerful reminder of where I've been, and others are an eye-opening shock of how bad things can be for some of you. And each one I get is a clear indication that what I started over here at The Overwhelmed Brain was a good idea. I don't want to make it sound like I'm bragging here because I have so much more to learn, but what I have learned over the years, many people sell in products and services. So when I started this show, I realized that in order to affect the most people, I needed to give it away. I need to give away everything I know for free. And then after doing that for about a year and a half, I decided that it was time to start coaching one-on-one, because even though the show was a brain dump about everything I know about a particular topic, I still didn't address very specific issues and the complexities that we all experience. So that coaching covered those people. And then I took what problems appear to be the most prevalent from your letters and from my clients, and I stuck them in books and worksheets so that I could hopefully cover the gamut of how else I could help you with what I've learned over my lifetime of personal experience and professional training. I'm always finding ways to reach more people, and I'll also always try to fill in the gaps of those I can't reach. But why am I telling you this? Why? I'm telling you because I want you to embrace that you have knowledge and experience that others don't, and that you can also share your wisdom, your experience, your training with the world, or as many people as you can, so that others can learn from you. I am one person who knows what I've learned, and I choose to keep learning. I dedicate my time and energy to evolving and expanding my mind so that I can help you evolve and expand yours. And this is what you can do for others. We all know something that someone else doesn't. And when we teach someone what we know, we expand who we are. You see how that works? I've worked with people who would withhold information that would be helpful to me and others, but they wanted to keep all their knowledge because they feared that if others knew what they knew, they might lose their job or get fired because now that knowledge is no longer protected. I won't lie, this can happen. You can know how to do what you do better than anyone, and by sharing it with others, you now make yourself redundant. Well, that's my mission, to make myself redundant. I want you to know as much as I know so that your life is easier. I give it away. I give as much as I can away because I want you to have the most stress-free life possible. A stress-free life is almost impossible, I know, but the closer you are to that, the easier it is to deal with the challenges that come every day. Once you're in a space where a lot of the buried negative emotions are expressed and released, things that used to bother you no longer do. That's what I want for you, and this is exactly what you can do for others. You know things that others don't, so what can you teach them that would make their life easier? I don't care if it's something as simple as how to use a paperclip the right way. Sometimes that can save someone a lot of headaches. I showed my girlfriend a button that she never saw in her accounting program, and it completely flushed her frustrations out of her system. She was elated. It was a simple thing that completely altered her state and perception of the program. I say, alter someone's state. Be giving with what you know. And the more knowledge you give, the more people around you become your allies, not your enemies. Unless they're really your enemy, but you'll weed those people out soon enough. My message to end this show is teach someone something that makes their life easier. Look for things that they do that seem to frustrate them, and figure out if you can find an easier way to do what they need to do. Now, if you have a boss, do this for him or her, and you'll soon find your relationship gets a lot better with them. I'm just saying. And with that, I want you to open your mind and step into your power and be firm in your decisions and actions so that you can create the life you want. You are powerful beyond measure. And above all, and this is something I absolutely know to be true about you, you are amazing.
When you drive a vehicle so reliable it's backed by a 10-year, 100,000-mile limited warranty, you stop thinking about what you can't do and start doing what you never thought possible. Visit your local Kia dealer today to see what you're capable of in a vehicle that inspires confidence around every corner. Kia. Movement that inspires.
Call 800-333-4KIA for details. Always drive safely. Limited inventory available. Warranties include 10-year, 100,000-mile powertrain and 5-year, 60,000-mile basic. Warranties are limited. See retailer for details.
What's the best part of a Dunkin' Run? The coffee? Is it the coffee or the $1 donut or $2 stuffed bagel minis or $3 sausage, egg, and cheese that you can add to it? The answer, of course, is yes. Time for a Dunkin' Run. $3 offer available on sausage, egg, and cheese sandwich only. Excludes specialty donuts and fancies. Offer valid on medium or larger coffee. Price and participation may vary. Limited time offer terms apply.